As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, welcome to the Unseen and Chapman pod on The Athletic. As usual, we're bringing you exclusive insights and stories from David and our team of writers. Today, we're going to have the best lines from David's column, including an update on Liverpool's thinking around transfers in the wake of their defensive injury crisis. We'll have news of a contract dispute maybe on the horizon between Wolves and Adama Traore. We're joined by our Derby writer, Ryan Conway, as well, after the axe finally fell on Philip Koku on Saturday evening. We'll hear what happened and also what could be next. And that, of course, means whether Wayne Rooney will be Koku's replacement. To read all the articles we discuss on today's podcast in full, just head to www.theathletic.com/Ornstein and Chapman to sign up for just £1 a week. David's YouTube show, Ask Ornstein, continues this week. Subscribers can submit questions in the comments section of David's weekly column on The Athletic. And I'm back on this podcast feed on Thursday alongside Matt Slater for our new pod, The Business of Sport. Okay, David, well, let's start the pod with one of the, it's the headline in your column today about Liverpool, their defensive problems and whether they will or whether they won't look to strengthen in January. You'd go down the unlikely to strengthen in January.
Well, only from what I've heard from speaking to multiple people with really good knowledge of the situation. Obviously, when Virgil van Dijk suffered his potentially season-ending injury, there was a lot of talk about whether Liverpool would replace him, even more so with Joe Gomez's injury on England training duty last week. And now for many people, it's sort of inconceivable that they won't strengthen in January. But just reflecting my conversations, and it's not saying they definitely won't. It's not saying things won't change. But right now, from what I'm hearing, that they're not planning to sign a centre-back in January, and the hope is that they will be able to go with what they've got and that results won't deteriorate and they won't suffer even more injuries in that position. They're doing pretty well in the Premier League and Champions League, and they've got plans for the summer, which are already being worked upon. As I say in the column, I'm not ruling out, or I wouldn't rule out, that maybe those plans could be escalated if the need and the availability marry up. But at this moment in time, and again, that could change, and we've seen things change with Liverpool and other clubs in the past, the option to go with, say, a Matip, a Fabinho, a couple of the younger players, I don't know if there's any other internal solutions, but they're not looking to go into the market right now. And I know there's been a lot of speculation over the likes of Upamecano, Koulibaly, David Alaba, and even sort of lower cost options which would fill the gap. But I don't know if Liverpool would be happy going for lower cost options that would fill a gap if they're not better than what they've already got, with the hope that the first choice pairing of Van Dijk and Gomez are going to come back once they're fit again. Yes, that's quite a long time away, but I don't think it's as clear cut as just saying they're definitely going to sign somebody, because from reflecting my conversations at the time of reporting, that is not what I'm hearing.
Okay, let's bring Simon Hughes into this, the Athletic's Liverpool writer. Is that your understanding, or from the people you've spoken to, do you think they might bring someone in? Or the other possibility, they're saying they won't necessarily bring someone in, so it calms everything, and then they still do, because that's what they did in the summer with Thiago and Jota, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's just to echo really what David said there, that Liverpool won't do anything if it jeopardises sort of the medium-term, long-term plan. I mean, they always work two or three windows ahead, and I think they'd, from my understanding, that they'd had quite a bit of encouragement about deals for next summer around centre-halves. So I think that was always the plan, that obviously Lovren would leave. There's a couple of players that they wanted. They always have a list of four sort of priority players, and I believe that Upamecano, who I'm saying that right, he's definitely on that list, and his contract situation means that he could be available in the summer. So they're not going to go and sign a player in the short term who jeopardises the possibility of getting the player that they really want. And I think Liverpool have got a track record of sort of doing that, really. When you think back to when they signed Virgil van Dijk, who obviously was viewed as a key signing, he was, you know, world record FIFA defender. There was the option to go and try and sign somebody else when the deal originally fell through for that in the summer of, what summer was it? It was 2017. But Jurgen Klopp decided, no, he was the player that I wanted. He's the one who I'm going to hang my hat on. And they ended up waiting for that deal and got it over the line. So it's a different situation now, of course, because, you know, it's a defensive crisis. There's no other way of putting it. I know it might be might seem quite dramatic, but they do have a defensive crisis. They've gone from having sort of four established, you could say, world class defenders to having possibly one. And Joel Matip's injury record would suggest that he's not capable of sort of taking control of that defence on a week by week basis. So they do have major problems in that area. Who knows, they might have to go and pay a tariff on a higher tariff on somebody who they value for less. Depends what happens over the next couple of weeks, because I don't think it can get any worse, really. Let's not forget Nat Phillips, who played against West Ham, was on the verge of being sold to Bristol City in the summer. So it sort of shows you what the solutions are, the sort of options that they have at the moment. There's a few players further back in the pecking order. Billy Cometti, who's a young he's a teenager who's very highly rated. He's had his own injury problems as well, which have sort of ruled him out for the start of the season, when I think he might have got a few minutes on the pitch. So it's something that it's a different situation that they're facing at the moment, and I suspect that they may have to reassess where they're at over the next couple of weeks, because if it gets any worse, you know, that it's going to affect the whole structure of the team. You know, if you start putting midfielders in defence, then you're risking the midfield not working quite as well as it has in the past. So it's a major problem for Liverpool at the moment, I think.
And that point you raised, Mark, about Liverpool having said similar things in the past and then going and making a signing and perhaps a public message or whatever, that I'm quite interested to get Simon's thoughts on that, because, you know, they didn't actually say last summer they weren't going to make signings. They just sort of explained that, you know, it would depend on outgoings, which ended up happening if you look at the sort of net spend. It was also a very difficult market for many clubs, because in the height of the pandemic, a lot of them were saying things that, as football returned, things started to change a little bit and scenarios were made possible. And Liverpool's business last summer kind of did balance out in a way. Do you see it's a very good chance that, if my information is correct, and at this point in time they're not focusing on bringing somebody in and they hope that what they've got now will see them through to maybe a summer plan, do you reckon that's very likely to change, or do you reckon that is genuinely their ambition right now?
It's a slightly different situation to the summer, I guess. I mean, the message that I got back from the club about Thiago in the summer, It left a big gap for the possibility of that deal happening. It was never, we're not going to sign him. They never misled over that. It was just the message coming back was, well, you know, a lot needs to happen to get this deal over the line. It was more the other side. I was getting a lot of encouragement from people in Germany that I speak to and people potentially around the deal. I was getting the impression, well, you know, the club Bayern Munich accepted that the player wanted to leave. The player wanted to come. So you've got two of the elements, and Liverpool clearly wanted to sign him. So there was a lot of willingness on each party's, you know, each party which is involved in that deal for it to happen. It was just the circumstances had to be right. You're right in what you're saying. Liverpool had to balance the books and make sure that they had deals in. You know, they were confident they were going to get deals in terms of sales, so they could justify bringing him in. So obviously the situation's different this January transfer window. I mean, we're still obviously operating in a world where the pandemic's having a big impact on the day-to-day sort of revenues that are coming into the club. So I don't think Liverpool can really necessarily afford to go and splurge a huge sum of money at this moment in time. Obviously, they will have taken encouragement about the vaccine and everything else, that they can get fans back into stadiums and start getting their match day revenues back up towards the level that they would expect at a time when the clubs, you know, the clubs are the champions of England. So I suspect, I mean, some of it will be the circumstance over the next couple of weeks. I think that Liverpool can't really afford to lose any more players. I mean, obviously, Jordan Henderson picked up an injury playing for England last night, or at least he was taken off at half-time as a precaution. He was a player who I thought might end up sort of playing some games at centre-half, as he did in the World Club Championship last winter. He actually played very well, I thought, in that position. But as I said, the problem is that if he goes and plays there, you need Thiago to be fit and Naby Keita to be fit to make sure that the whole structure of the team doesn't collapse. So if they could get the deal that suits them, that they think is value for money, you know, I wouldn't rule that out. But equally, I think Liverpool are acutely aware that they're in quite a vulnerable position, because obviously every club knows how desperate they are for a centre half. So that in theory could inflate the prices that they, you know, the clubs are looking for players. As I said, when Liverpool know that there's a clause in Upamecano's contract at the end of the season which could allow him to come for an amount of money which is certainly agreeable on Liverpool's part, a player who's so highly rated, a player who, you know, that the club have watched a lot, you know, I think that they would be reluctant to miss out on a deal for a player who, he's 21, 22, could play for the club for the next 10 years. So they don't want to do anything that would jeopardise the possibility of that deal happening. But we'll see. As you said, David, it can change quite quickly. I don't see it being a Liverpool deal for Stephen Corker in the summer of 2016.
But also similar circumstantial sort of situations do develop, like you say. So if somebody like David Alaba was a target for the summer, and everybody knows that he'll be out of contract if he doesn't sign a new deal with Bayern Munich, a lot of the clubs who are interested might try and strike some sort of arrangement in January because of necessity and availability, etc. I just before Mark picks back up, I just wanted to ask one more thing. Does your information tally with mine? I don't sense that Jurgen Klopp's sort of smashing at the door to get a centre half right now. It seems that if things work out okay, it may be an opportunity for players. You mentioned Phillips. There's also Reece Williams, who's had a couple of Champions League appearances. And we're told that these are all decisions, the ownership, Michael Edwards, Jurgen Klopp. I don't sense that right now, as you said, things can change. But I don't sense right now, despite a lot of negative reaction from some Liverpool fans to the story that we put out this morning, completely dismissing it, suggesting it will be a disaster. Liverpool are doing well domestically and in Europe at the moment, and Klopp doesn't seem to be absolutely adamant that he has to sign a centre-back as things stand.
I know the club inwardly really like Reece Williams. I remember speaking to Alex Inglethorpe 2 or 3 years ago, and I said to him, who do you think, you know, could be the next one through the academy? And I hadn't heard of Reece Williams at the time, and he did say, oh, I think, you know, he's got a really good chance. And I was quite taken aback by that. So when he went to Kidderminster on loan again, I was like, well, that's not really a natural path of progression. But they obviously wanted him to experience sort of real sort of men's football and what it's like to play for 3 points. And I know Jurgen Klopp's been very impressed with him, but to throw him into this situation where it's, you know, the sort of, it feels like the whole season could rest on whether he performs or not, I think it's a big ask of any young player in a position which is a key position. So I think there's a lot that could happen over the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool can get the deal that they want. I think they'll go and do it, but I just think they won't just go and snatch at any deal which you know fills a gap in the team, that they'll want any player that they sign to have some longevity at the club and be able to replace what they're missing. It won't be just a sort of knockdown, sort of bargain basement type signing, just who fills a gap for 6 months. It's just Liverpool just don't do business that way.
I know you say it's a big ask of Williams or Phillips, but you know, some players have made their careers of taking an opportunity like this, haven't they? And just because I suppose Phillips was close to going to Bristol City, there could be a whole array of factors involved in that, couldn't there, Simon? You know, Liverpool saying, well, actually, when we look at it, there are four centre-halves ahead of you, or three centre-halves. We've got Fabinho can play in there. Actually, you aren't going to get that many opportunities. For the good of you in your career, we will sell you to Bristol City. It doesn't necessarily mean that he isn't good enough.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the one thing you sort of learn, even by Jurgen Klopp's career, I think he likes players with this sort of interesting backstories, like Nat Phillips. I mean, I found it quite interesting after the game against West Ham, when a lot of people were saying that he should have been Liverpool's man of the match. I mean, Jurgen didn't really speak too positively about the level of grace with which Nat Phillips plays, shall we put it that way. And, you know, he said, you know, he's basically a big ugly centre-half who heads balls away. So in some games, I'm sure that sort of player will be necessary. They'll need somebody with a bit more physicality. I wasn't surprised that he was left out of the Man City game, just because of the way Man City play. You know how intricate they are around the box. So I think he can play certain games of football for Liverpool. It's dependent on the opponents. I mean, a lot will depend on that, I think. So he could end up playing, you know, quite a few games this season. I think Jurgen Klopp's not one of these managers who believes that every career has a sort of a predefined direction. I think he knows that he does reward strong performances in training, particularly, you know, if the player's doing so well in training that he can't ignore him, and that if he performs well in the matches, he will reward that, you know. So he's not one of these managers who sort of thinks, well, I made my decision on him, he's gone. You know, he's not going to get a chance. If he goes in and plays well, then it's up to him. You know, it's up to the player to go and prove that he's capable of performing at that level. So I just get the impression, when I watch him, this is just my view, that he looks like a sort of a very good Championship defender to play for Liverpool. You know, champions of England, not so long ago, champions of Europe. It's a big jump, and we will see. But I mean, for the time being, he's obviously going to play games before the new year. He's going to have to, because Liverpool's options are so severely depleted in that area at the moment.
Thank you, Simon. Good to have you on, as ever. And more from Simon and the rest of the Athletic's Liverpool writers on our dedicated Liverpool podcast, The Red Agenda.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Let's move on to Derby County next on the pod, with the club releasing a statement on Saturday at 5 o'clock saying that Philip, that's in the afternoon, by the way, saying that Philip Cocu's 16th, well, you never know, do you, with some football clubs, saying that Philip Cocu's 16th month tenure was ending after both parties mutually agreed to part ways. Ryan Conway is the Athletic's Derby writer. His piece on the site at the moment is entitled Inside the Unravelling of Cocu's Derby. So much detail on it. And it would be fair to say, Ryan, first and foremost, that this has been coming for a few weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. They had a little bit of a bounce back when they beat Norwich 1-0, but that came after a particularly damaging defeat at home against Blackburn. You know, they were the better team in that game for 10 minutes, and then 3 goals in 4 minutes, and suddenly they were blown away, and it all fell apart. So they bounced back a little bit at Norwich, and then the performances picked up quite significantly, actually. They were very good in games against Nottingham Forest. They were good against Cardiff for 45 minutes against Huddersfield. I thought they were excellent. But their inability to kill games off and also not focus for the full 90 minutes, meaning they always conceded, bit them. And then you're looking at back-to-back home games against Queen's Park Rangers and Barnsley. You're thinking, this is it. You have to get minimum 4 points, but ideally 6 to start a little bit of momentum going into the international break. And they lost both. And I think the manner in which they lost those games was really uninspiring. And I think at that, you know, particularly after the QPR one, which was the last one Cocky was on the touchline for because he's self-isolating, I think that was the point where it was like, yeah, something has to give here.
But they took their time before actually making the decision.
Yeah, and I think there was a large acceptance that the start of the season, there was a lot of turnover at the club. I think 7 players left, and they also brought in 7 players. They were playing the first 4 games of the season without any of their 3 top goal scorers from last season. Martin Wycorn and Tom Lawrence were injured, and Chris Martin had left for Bristol City on a free transfer. I think there was a large acceptance that sort of, yeah, you're going to struggle if you don't have those guys, and you're trying to integrate new players into the squad, and players are still leaving the squad. But once the bulk of those players had got back, it was sort of, well, now what? Because all these players are back now, and, you know, we thought things would pick up, and they haven't.
Ryan, reading your piece, which is outstanding, and I'd recommend anyone goes and has a look at it for themselves, despite being a very good man and really highly respected, it just seems that everything that could have gone wrong in a sort of managerial departure did go wrong. It had all the ingredients that made this kind of inevitable. And now it leads us to the question that everyone wants answering is this Wayne Rooney's job? And really, I felt from the outside that the moment he came into the club that we were always getting towards that point at some stage.
Yeah, I think, and again, as I outlined in the piece, thank you for complimenting that. You know, I think there is a feeling that Rooney wants the job. There was a couple of times where he, off his own back, did not the post-match team talks, but they almost served as that after losses against Luton last year and Blackburn this year. Came in as a player coach, and that, at the time, that role was always very oddly defined because he had no defined coaching role per se. You know, he would help with the analytics stuff and the cutting up of video clippings and stuff like that. But he was never really a defined role there. He is now going to be essentially co-managing with Liam Rossini. So I think it's he's putting himself in the frame for it. And as I said and outlined in the piece, there's a feeling that he wants that job. And if there is an appointment from within, it will be Rooney.
And so it wouldn't be Rossini then if there's an appointment within, because it's an interesting dilemma for Derby. It's an interesting choice for Derby. You've got a man who has won virtually everything that he could have won during his career, a huge international footballer. But also with Liam Rossini, you've got someone who has done his coaching badges, has worked his way up, is a former player himself. And if you spend time with Liam, talking about the game with Liam, there is a seriously, seriously impressive thinker about the game of football.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've had the opportunity to speak to Liam a few times, you know, just for press duties and stuff like that. Really engaging guy. Really enjoy talking to him. Never get the sense that he BS's you when you ask him questions. I always think he gives you really nice answers, you know, honest answers. And he is a fully qualified coach, as you say. Internally, I know the club think very, very highly of him, which begs the question, if you think so highly of him, why is he not the favourite for the job? I can't answer that question.
Does it come down to a commercial aspect then? Because there was quite a lot of stories about the commercial side of bringing Rooney to the club in the first place. Do you think that's what will matter most on making the appointment?
Especially if new owners come in and want a big name.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't matter most, but it probably will have some sway. I did a piece not long after Rinier joined about the impact that he'd had in terms of, you know, social media hits that the club's Twitter feed was getting, in terms of, you know, shirt sales and YouTube views and stuff like that. You know, he gets the numbers up. If you're a new owner coming to the club, what better way to get more eyes on the thing that you've just bought than putting Wayne Rooney in charge of that thing?
Do you think this is a sort of sour end for Mel Morris, with the takeover seemingly imminent now, and Cocu, a big name appointment in his own right, pretty much ending in unfortunate failure?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. I think he's done some good things in terms of what he's put into the academy, and that is starting to bear fruit that we're seeing on the pitch. But you know, there will certainly be some disappointment had that he really wanted to be the guy to get them to the Premier League. You know, he's a local lad who, you know, lived in, brought up in Little Over, which is just down the street. You know, he's a Derby fan. You know, he really wanted to get the club back into the Premier League, and I think was too aggressive in that approach early in his tenure, when they spent around 30 million, I think, in his first, you know, his first full year that he took ownership, you know, wanting to get into the Premier League, and it just hasn't worked out. You know, the playoff final defeat last year was upsetting. You know, they weren't really heartbroken about it, but again, to have come so close once more and fall at the last hurdle was upsetting, and I think this sort of compounds that misery that they were that close 2 years ago, and now they seem further away than ever before.
I was going to ask you a question on that, actually, about how far away they are. I haven't seen a full 90 minutes of Derby this season. Are they actually any good at the moment? I mean, is bottom an unfair reflection on the way they're playing and the quality within that squad?
No, I mean, you know, as an NFL chap, as you know, the very famous quote, you are what your record says you are. Derby County are what their record says they are. They are bottom, and right, they are deservedly bottom, because at the end of the day, you don't get to bottom by fluke. But I am convinced that this is a good team. This is a good squad with versatile pieces, a lot of good quality, a lot of invention. The signing of David Marshall in goal was inspired. He's been magnificent and deserves more than one clean sheet to his name. Having watched every goal that they've conceded multiple times, I'm not sure any, apart from the opening goal of the Barnsley game, have been his fault. He's been really, really good. Kamu Yozviat looks like he'll be a star in the Championship. And they've got dependable players like Martin Wycorn, Curtis Davis, Andre Wisdom, Graham Shinney, Jason Knight. You know, this is a good squad. There are good players that can't get into that team. Dwayne Holmes is a prime example. He was a key factor in turning hopes around in January and February until he broke his leg, and he's not really sort of got his form back from that. So there are good players in that squad. I think they are a little bit off in terms of playoffs. I don't know, that sounds ridiculous because they're bottom, but I think when you assess the talent of the squad, I think if they were to get a striker you could guarantee 20 goals a season from, that would go a very, very long way. And I think they maybe need a creative number 10 in there as well. They've sort of recycled that position a little bit, and it's been hit and miss. So yeah, it's a little bit off if we look at the talent of the squad, but right now they have to focus on getting out of the relegation zone.
And what is the latest on the takeover, finally, to try and give Derby fans listening a little bit of hope? Where are we at?
Yeah, my understanding is it's close, could be wrapped up this week. You know, the understanding is that Mel Morris is going to stay on in the consultancy role. He's going to take a bit of a step back, but assist with a lot of things. Yeah, I think it's pretty close, and I think the you know, the departure of Cocu is another signal that, yeah, it's pretty close to happening now.
That's great, Ryan. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ryan.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and despite literally spending months of my life playing Football Manager, I'm still terrible at it. That's why I'm launching the Football Manager Show, the latest podcast from The Athletic. Every week, I'll speak to the people who know the game best, the people who make the game. We'll take a proper look at things like training, recruitment, and tactics. We'll try to answer your questions. We'll do everything we can to keep you eager to play just one more game, and altogether less inclined to quit without saving. The era of Cherno and Tonton and dear sweet Michael Duff is over. the new Football Manager is bigger, better, more challenging than ever. And I need some help. If you do too, you can subscribe now. Just look for the Football Manager show by The Athletic, wherever you get all your other podcasts. It starts in November, and knowing my track record, I'll be unemployed by December.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let's just pick up a couple of other lines from your column this week, David, and the situation with Wolves and Adama Traore.
Yeah, this comes to you from Dermot Corrigan and Tim Spears. And it's quite interesting because, you know, Adama Traore was one of Wolves' key players in over the last year or so. And he's attracted interest from a lot of clubs. It seemed that a new contract would be a formality. There's no real rush on this. He's under contract until 2023. But he suddenly slipped out of the team. I don't think he started since late September. And from people we've spoken to, or Dermot and Tim have, it seems he feels he's being left out of the team because the contract negotiations have kind of hit a deadlock and there's a standoff between the two parties. People, I think, at Wolves say that's not true and it's purely down to football reasons, and Nuno Espirito Santo and Adama himself aren't involved in the negotiations. It's people on their behalf. But it's strange because he's obviously made progress in recent times at international level as well. He's extremely dangerous a player. If he was to leave, Wolves would be expecting, what, double the, at least the 18 million they paid Middlesbrough for him in 2018. But yeah, that's a really interesting story and one to watch, especially because we know that some of the Premier League and Europe's biggest clubs have been linked with him in the past.
There's also news of a potential centre-back sign, another one, potential centre-back signing for Manchester United.
This was actually information from a colleague that seems to have come under my name. David Carmo is extremely highly rated. Sporting Braga, 21 years old. There have been some early comparisons drawn with Virgil van Dijk in terms of his sort of physique and ability on the ball. We understand that at least 10 different clubs have held discussions with his representatives, a number of them including Manchester United, apparently, and other members of the Big Six. Roma came closest to signing him in the summer. They had a €17 million bid rejected. And interestingly, a release clause that he had at the time, €20 million, has now gone up to €40 million. So I think it's just another one to watch as another really interesting Portuguese player. Actually, just one extra point I should have mentioned on Adama is that he's not represented by Jorge Mendes, and some in the game think that that could be a bit of an issue around the contract standoff with Wolves. So, yeah, two Portuguese situations tied into one just there.
And finally, we haven't mentioned Arsenal on this pod, so let's rectify. Wow. Yeah, I know. Well, we need to rectify.
And
that,
I don't
obviously.
Even have to answer on it. It's going to be you introducing this.
I know. We're just going to play this. James McNicholas has spoken to Mathieu Flamini for a piece that's on the site today, so we can play you some of that interview now on the pod.
We used to point football player for like a negative story. And I mean, now when we speak about football players, when we speak about football, we have amazing stories. We have a very inspiring stories. And we can see that from, you know, like from Marcus Rashford. We can see that from other players, you know, from other athletes. And that's very inspiring. I mean, that's the football we want to see. That's the type of story we want to communicate. And I think more and more athletes have realized that it's not enough to perform on a pitch. It's also important to perform off the pitch. And performing off the pitch means like showing the right examples. I mean, now, I mean, athletes are becoming role models. They have a social responsibility.
Mathieu Flamini there on the social responsibility that athletes have. You can listen to the full interview on the Handbrake Off podcast and read the article on The Athletic. And as we've discussed before, David, more and more footballers, more and more athletes taking up social causes.
Social, environmental. We've seen the incredible work done by Marcus Rashford. We've had Hector Bellerin on the podcast He's a very close friend of Mathieu Flamini, talking about the environment, sustainability, plastics, and much more besides. And you can find a number of other players who are either investing financially, emotionally, in this sort of thing, because they realise both the importance of it and the platform that they have. Hector Bellerin has invested in Forest Green Rovers, a team who are leading the way on sustainability. I think Arsenal have just announced a deal themselves as a club on the morning we record this, that's going to see them leading the way on sort of certain environmental issues. Manchester United and various other clubs are taking these responsibilities seriously and realising what sort of effect they can have, especially with such enormous followings, both as clubs and individuals. So yeah, check out that interview with Flamini. He's a really interesting guy, and his sort of post football career journey has taken him a way that pretty much no other player has gone. Although I do think, and I have seen him say before, that he's not completely finished. He would be open to opportunities. So you might not have seen the last of him on the pitch. You certainly haven't seen the last of him off the pitch with all of this very impressive work.
Good stuff, David. Thanks very much for today.
Pleasure.
We'll see you all next week. Thank you very much. Bye.